Hello everyone, my name is Uldar. Welcome to another episode of Ask Me About North Korea, a podcast about the most reclusive country in the world. In this podcast, I'm answering the most widespread questions about North Korean politics, society, and culture, in a short and concise manner, based on factual evidence. If you like this podcast, I would be grateful if you could share it with your friends, leave a positive review, make a donation, or subscribe. You can also visit the podcast website, www.askmeaboutdprk.wordpress.com. There you can access episode transcripts, as well as some other materials, such as book reviews, film recommendations, and online events. As the name of the podcast suggests, please feel free to ask me questions in your comments and reviews. I will do my best to answer them in the next episodes. And now, let's start. Moscow is often seen, similar to Beijing, as one of the key allies of the North Korean regime. Yet politics and history of Russian-North Korean relations have vacillated from strategic importance to complete indifference, and the pendulum would swing back and forth every other decade. The Korean Peninsula, which lies at the easternmost border with Russia, has remained in the focus of Russia's and USSR's geopolitical attention throughout the 20th century. Korea, on the other hand, even before its division, saw Russia as an important counterbalance to other geopolitical giants such as Japan or China. Today, I will try to explain the historic context of Russian-North Korean relations and elaborate on why their importance dwindled with time. The contemporary relations between North Korea and Russia are largely based on their common historical experience of communism building. After the end of the Second World War, as you most probably know, the Korean Peninsula was liberated from Japan together by the Soviet soldiers in the north and American soldiers in the south. The Soviet Union was interested in either regaining influence on the Korean Peninsula or in making it permanently neutral, which couldn't happen with the Americans marching into the south. Thus, North Korea, which was politically and economically shaped by Stalin's Soviet Union, has remained a part of the international communist movement. The level of North Korea's political dependence on the Soviet Union was very high at first. It remained under the rule of the Soviet Civil Administration and People's Committee of North Korea from 1945 to 1948. The Stalinist Soviet Union had become a role model for the first leader of North Korea, Kim Il-sung. For being a diligent apprentice, Kim Il-sung also received a lot of economic and military support throughout the first years of the country's existence. Even after the Soviet army officially withdrew from North Korea, Moscow had remained a key military ally and patron of the Kim regime. It was the Soviet Union, under Stalin's leadership, that signed off Kim Il-sung's plans to start the Korean War together with China's assistance. The Soviet 64th Fighter Aviation Corps even took part in that war by providing North Korea and China with badly needed air support. Naturally, this political alliance wasn't focused only on military matters. After all, the Soviet Union aimed to promote its socio-economic model in the regions of its political influence. Thus, Moscow provided a lot of economic support to North Korea during the period of the Cold War, even when bilateral relations were sour. Throughout the 1950s and 1960s, the Soviet Union saw a possibility of using North Korea, similarly to East Germany, as a showcase of communist developmental model in Asia. It was very important for the Soviet Union to show to the world community that the capitalist South Korea was worse off. And for a while, it did work, as the North was developing much faster back then than the South. Seoul was paralyzed with revolutions, military coup attempts, and all sorts of political instability. Other interests of the Soviet Union were purely ideological and political. Supporting a friendly communist or even socialist government was a priority for the Communist Party of the Soviet Union, which had to compete both with the United States and with the Chinese Communist Party. North Korea, on the other hand, saw the Soviet Union as a role model, even though later on Pyongyang began to drift off ideologically from Moscow by developing its own Chuche concept. Furthermore, North Korea also needed the Soviet diplomatic support, along with the Chinese one, to ensure that South Korea does not get admitted to the United Nations and other international organizations, since both countries were competing to be legitimate representatives of the entire Korean people. That could be made possible only through the permanent pressure exerted by the USSR and China in the United Nations Security Council, which had the right to define who could be admitted to the United Nations and who couldn't. On top of all that, Pyongyang still needed the USSR as a resource supply and economic partner. Thus, Kim Il-sung was paying a lot of attention to North Korea's relationship with Moscow and visited the USSR 5 times. The last time was in 1986, during the early Gorbachev era. He would also meet with the Soviet officials abroad, including Soviet leader Leonid Brezhnev during the funeral of Yugoslav President Josip Broz Tito in May 1980. Naturally, China was another part of this geopolitical equation, and the USSR could never claim the same degree of political dominance in North Korean politics like it did in many Eastern European countries. As both communist regimes began to compete with each other in the late 1950s, the situation became even better for Pyongyang. Kim Il-sung received a great opportunity to play on the contradictions between Moscow and Beijing. That way, he managed to extract as many gains as possible, both for himself and for his country. While the Soviet Union subsidized trade with North Korea, China signed a special security treaty with Pyongyang. Ideologically, Kim Il-sung refused to support Moscow's Khrushchev, but also criticized Mao Zedong. By the way, if you are curious about the past and contemporary complexities of the Sino-North Korean relations, make sure to check out episode 28. Anyway, as the time went on and nothing practical came out of the relationship with North Korea, the Soviet government under Mikhail Gorbachev began to reduce aid after 1985. Moscow came to a logical conclusion that the regime in Pyongyang was both economically and politically unreliable, which was quite true at the time. In parallel, the USSR broke diplomatic ranks too and opted out in favor of reconciliation with South Korea. The Soviet team even attended the 1988 Olympic Games in Seoul despite loud and angry protests coming from Pyongyang. As you most likely know, the USSR was thrown into the period of political instability in the late 1980s and eventually collapsed by 1991. The Soviet downfall became a political lesson for the North Korean government, which they interpreted as something like, "Those crazy Russians became too liberal." The Russian Federation proclaimed itself to be the successor state of the Soviet Union. But Moscow's new elites tried to distance themselves as much as they could from the former communist and authoritarian legacy. Hence, it shouldn't be surprising that Russian-North Korean relations got off to a bumpy start, as Moscow didn't just ignore political context with the DPRK. It began to diplomatically bash Pyongyang on a regular basis, as well as close down all the remaining channels of cooperation. For example, in 1992, the Russian foreign minister declared that Moscow would stop all military cooperation with the North and will put pressure on it to drop its nuclear plans. During the same period of time, Russia's first president, Boris Yeltsin, described the former Soviet-North Korean security treaty as existing only on paper. The death of Kim Il-sung was received rather coldly by the Russian government, with Yeltsin even refusing to send condolences while major newspapers used the event to denounce the autocratic regime in North Korea, as well as communism generally. This trend remained dominant in bilateral relations for quite some time, until Vladimir Putin came to power in Moscow. Compared to his predecessor, Putin would treat North Korea with greater political dignity, even though he would still refuse to provide any significant economic aid to Pyongyang, in the same way the Soviets did. Under Putin's reign, the second leader of North Korea, Kim Jong-il, visited the country twice. The newly established Russian Federation has also for the first time systemically reassessed its foreign policy priorities toward the DPRK. Specifically, it chose to do so through very close cooperation with China, which remains to be the DPRK's closest partner. I wouldn't use the word ally. Naturally, what united all these three countries was authoritarianism as well as hostility towards many Western powers, and especially the United States. But let us look at the strategic priorities of the Russian foreign policy under Putin. For the last two decades, Russia has been very consistent in pursuing three main goals with respect to North Korea: denuclearization, military stabilization, and preservation of the DPRK as a state. The problem for Russia is that the measures required for achieving those goals can be mutually contradicting. The need to preserve North Korea as a state largely comes from contemporary Russia's distaste for Washington's regime change strategy. As its foreign policy became increasingly anti-American and anti-Western, Russia chose to support any political measures that could make the DC policymakers miserable. Specifically, since the reunification of Korea will most likely mean that American troops stationed right next to the Russian border will be even closer, Moscow is not particularly jubilant at the idea of the South and North becoming one country again. At the same time, Russia is quite willing to cooperate with the US and other Western powers when it comes to punishing Pyongyang for the violation of the nuclear non-proliferation regime, since North Korea's actions are actively undermining Russia's special stance as the de jure recognized nuclear power. Hence, with regard to the North Korean nuclear problem, Moscow and Beijing have always been acting in unison. For example, in July 2017, during the summit between Putin and Xi Jinping in Moscow, a joint statement was adopted by their foreign ministers. The statement put forward a joint Sino-Russian initiative for resolving the Korean Peninsula's nuclear and military problems through the concept of dual freeze, temporarily halting US-South Korea large-scale joint military exercises in exchange for North Korea freezing its nuclear activities. In the same year, both the Russian and Chinese representatives in the UN Security Council contributed to and voted in favor of the new economic sanctions resolutions to show their condemnation of North Korean actions. Let us take a look at other spheres of bilateral cooperation. Economically speaking, there is not much real interest in cooperation on Russia's side with all the UN sanctions against Pyongyang in place. Furthermore, as some researchers point out, the Russian and North Korean economies are structurally incompatible. Regular commercial trade always remained modest in scale, even when the Soviet Union largely subsidized it with economic assistance, reaching the maximum of $2.4 billion in today's equivalent at its highest. It's not all too bad, though. Some Russian companies are quite interested in developing infrastructural projects in North Korea, such a gas pipeline connecting South Korea with the Russian Far East, building an electrical grid through the North Korean territory which would benefit energy consumers in South Korea, or upgrading the North Korean railway system. Nevertheless, Russia doesn't envisage any active participation of North Korea in any of these ventures, where the country would merely serve as a transit space that needs to be covered in order to most efficiently reach the South Korean market, which is what Russia is really interested in. Unfortunately for Russia, all such projects and investments can be quite vulnerable to political mood swings on the Korean Peninsula, which are usually rather unpredictable. Until 2017, in terms of real trade, the only thing that North Korea could competitively offer to Russia was its highly skilled and disciplined laborers, who are willing to toil under tough working conditions in exchange for low salaries. This was of particular interest to Russia, given the chronic labor force shortages in its Far East. Even that part of economic cooperation disappeared from the bilateral agenda after the latest round of UN sanctions, which prohibited all countries in the world from allowing North Korean workers to work in their territories. That made hiring North Korean workers for any Russian company practically impossible. On top of all that, there are strict bilateral American and European sanctions which could ward off any company from doing business with the DPRK. In case of Russia, Moscow's ambassador to North Korea, Alexander Matsugura, lamented that even those Russian entrepreneurs who would like to do legitimate business with the North are, quote, terrorized, unquote, by the possibility of US penalties. According to him, there are many examples of shipping firms in the Russian Far East that found themselves on the verge of bankruptcy after being blacklisted by the US Treasury for alleged dealings with North Korea. Even companies which are exempt from Yuan sanctions fail to attract any major customers. If you are curious about such cases, make sure to read up Andrei Lenkov's article, which I will attach to the podcast blog post. The only part of this weird relationship which is still sort of working is its political element. One of the most recent significant political developments was the 2019 Putin-Kim meeting, which one could characterize only as political theater. Kim desperately needed to compensate for the diplomatic disaster that happened after the Hanoi summit with the former US President Donald Trump. For Moscow, on the other hand, the summit merely provided an opportunity to emphasize Russia's relevance in the Korean peace process, which has so far been dominated by the United States, China, and South Korea. During the summit, Russia unsurprisingly backed North Korea's advocacy of a phased disarmament process involving confidence-building measures with the United States. At the same time, Moscow showed no visible interest in sanctions relief, despite continuing the talk about inter-Korean railway and energy projects. North Korea, on its end, economically has little agency or leverage in bilateral relations and has little to offer to Russia. There have been some attempts to return to the old-style Kim Il-sung's diplomacy of balancing between China, Russia, and the United States. But this hasn't worked out that well so far for Pyongyang. At the same time, North Korea prefers not to irritate Russia and makes occasional political curses. For example, it voted in favor of recognizing Crimea as a part of Russia in the UN General Assembly. North Korea also takes good care of all former Soviet war memorials on its territory and, whenever it feels like it, jumps into and supports any anti-American rhetoric coming from Moscow. That is so much Pyongyang can do. Ironically, while it might seem that Moscow has become much more politically friendly to Pyongyang in the recent years, its actual societal, economic, and cultural indifference to North Korea, in my opinion, has remained constant ever since the collapse of the Soviet Union. In terms of foreign policy, since Russia and China have similar interests on the Korean Peninsula, Moscow prefers to take Beijing's lead, while occasionally reiterating its geopolitical presence through some symbolic means, like high-level symmetry. Finally, at societal level, North Korea has become some sort of a politically horrifying crooked mirror for the Russian intelligentsia, who are now feeling the actual impacts of democratic backsliding. What do you think, though? Could Russia play a more significant role in geopolitical controversies surrounding North Korea? Should it? Or will it remain sidelined by Washington and Beijing? Leave your opinion in the comments below or in the review section. If you liked this episode, please leave a positive review on the podcast platform or make a donation on the podcast website. Also, feel free to provide your feedback on this episode's quality and ask any questions about North Korea that you might have. Thank you for listening. Stay healthy and stay tuned.